I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's partly cloudy in West London after a showery beginning. I know that's what you all want to talk about, but no, we've got so much more to talk about because what a weekend. Tremendous games everywhere.
Yeah.
Marseille, didn't think it was going to start with that, right? Liverpool and Brentford finishing 3-3, a wild one. Inter and Atalanta, another wild one. The Rome derby, grumpy Mourinho, Ansu Fati coming back and scoring. There is so much, which is why I'm going to start talking really, really quickly and do this throughout the show. No, just kidding. Let's get right into it at the top with what for me was the biggest game of the weekend. Manchester City and Chelsea. And we're joined by Nedim Manua through the magic of television. Nedim, straight up, Pep Guardiola said, this was a tremendous performance. I'm not going to disagree. I don't care that it only finished 1-0. City wiped the floor with Chelsea.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me as well. And the biggest thing about it was nobody was really expecting that. You know, the result itself was the result, but it was the performance. Because I think that was the best performance in the Premier League so far this season. And considering the sort of plaudits we've been giving Chelsea and others throughout certain games they played this year, say Chelsea's defensive effort when they were at Anfield with 10 men and stuff like this. For Man City, they went down to Stamford Bridge against a side that, you know, they're rightly feeling themselves. And City controlled the game. Chelsea didn't have a shot on target in the whole game. And City did this without the number nine, who Chelsea have now, who's one of the best in the world.
Can we knock this number nine thing, please, on the head?
Listen, I'm like you on this because I keep trying to make counterpoints about this, but some of the best performances I've seen from Man City in the last year or so, they have come without a number nine. They've come with the Pep system and whatever it is and the players that they have. And it's not featured somebody who we'd look at and say, this is a classic nine. So I'm converted. It is what it is. Whatever he wants to do is what he wants to do.
You see the game, you see the way they're set up, and Lukaku in that team or Kane in that team would not have made a difference. He might have actually made things not as good and not that smooth than the way they played. So, yeah.
Yeah, I never got this recognized striker thing. As you know, I the narrative where they lost the Champions League final, I mean, you could say, yeah, because he tinkered with the team and didn't play a holding midfielder, fine. But certainly wasn't because of what happens up front. I want to turn it over to Chelsea now because we've got to do the good and the bad.
Yeah.
I kind of thought this was coming. We've talked about how this was coming because obviously they've won their recent games, but you know, wasn't great against Zenit. Obviously they road graded Spurs, but clearly that's not much of a feat these days, as Arsenal would show. And then before that against Villa, they were really poor. And still managed to win comprehensively. Nedim, were you surprised when you saw the lineup with three holding midfielders, effectively, Kante in there with Kovacic and Jorginho. And then also extra cover. Oh, let me put Azpilicueta, you know, who's effectively a center back, at wing back.
Yeah, so I think a big point in the game, which maybe doesn't get spoken about enough, is when Reece James had to leave, because I think he's better as a wing back on that side than, say, Azpilicueta would have been. So when they had to make that change early doors, it sort of affected their plans. But I was surprised to see them go for three midfielders. But to be honest, I was more surprised by just the Lukaku-Werner setup up top. But one thing about City, especially with the team that they have, I think Tuchel probably guessed that they're going to have 1,000 bodies in the centre of the field, and they needed to try and be competitive there to some extent. But unfortunately for him and that team, like, they could never really get a hold on the game because they've seen Chelsea try and move it in the way that they normally do. Except now the person receiving the ball has got 3-4 players around them, so they can't get in their normal flow. So for Tuchel, if he wants to make a change, the obvious change is to take off one of those midfielders, but then that's when the game became more open. And I think if City were more clinical, they probably would have scored more goals. So tactically, it literally wasn't right on the day. You know, performances weren't brilliant overall, but tactically, it just encouraged City. And yeah, I think Pep just had the upper hand, and those players had the upper hand on the day.
It's the first time really Tuchel gets it wrong, because pretty much since he arrived at Chelsea, everything had gone well for him, even in his decision making before games, during games, the coaching, all of that. This time it was wrong. It was right to make that call in the second half against Spurs, because in the first half they were not good, they were not winning the battles in midfield, not the second balls. I just don't understand how he thought, okay, that worked against Spurs in the second half away from home, let's do the same against City, when he knew that City going to press high, that he knew that the way that you caused them trouble last season when you won the three games is because you had those two number 10 behind your striker who played between the lines, who always offered an option. There was no options. Whoever had the ball and trying to play from the back had no option on Saturday, because City pressed so well, because they went with just the two at the back and then two lines of four, and you just could not get out. And I'm just amazed how Tuchel can make such a big mistake. You happy that Tuchel almost like apologized after the game, saying this one is on me, I got it wrong. Is it the right thing to do? That he just fessed up and said, you know,
as
what,
opposed
I would
to
try
what,
something.
Crying and complaining
no,
about the referee.
Say, he could just have said City were better than us, and that's it.
Maybe he could have done the Gerard Houllier thing. We're saying it's all David Ginola's fault that we're not going to the World
Cup. We've seen a lot of managers very recently in the Premier League who would not take any responsibility for a defeat like that one.
I think it is on him. I bet, Jules, I've been saying this all along, right? I love Tuchel. I think he's fantastic. I love the fact that there's this whole defensive aspect to his game, which he's added at Paris Saint-Germain, because we didn't see it before that at Mainz and at Dortmund. But now I need to see the other side of it. And I feel like I'm missing out on Tuchel. Okay, so you can defend very, very well. And it can take you a lot of places, and you're a good man manager, and you've done a tremendous job. But I think he's frustrated by it as well. To get those, what they call automatismos in Spanish, I think, which is essentially that chemistry between players. You talked about it before.
Automatism in French.
The guys, which there really is no English word for it.
Because they don't have any,
Yeah, exactly. the guys behind the striker, Nadim, when they've changed so much, right? Obviously, Lukaku wasn't there last season. It's like the only guy who was there all the time last season was Mount, who then doesn't play in a game like this, and maybe, we've talked about it before, maybe a little bit tired, not at the level he was at before. But even last year, it was, one game was Ziyech and Pulisic and then Werner and Havertz. Is this chemistry thing a thing? Or do we tend to kind of overrate it? And I see you're pursing your lips, which suggests to me that you're thinking, because I wonder about it, because weirdly at City, sometimes he moves people around, he plays different positions, plays Sterling on one flank, then the other flank, and Foden here and Foden there. And it all seems pretty seamless, even when they're not good.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're trying to say. And I think with those Chelsea players, the two tens for Chelsea, I think they're very, very important. I think they're very significant in terms of the way that Chelsea play. You know, they'll move the ball in a certain way, then they might play longer pass where the two tens will come on inside and this, that, and the other. But I think a difference between, say, City at this moment, in my opinion, and Chelsea as well, is that for the people when they play in the wide positions for City, they're not necessarily reliant upon their individualism to make them a great team. That those players are in those slots doing a very specific job. Whereas for Chelsea, I think you can notice a difference between the people who sometimes play in the tens, because Ziyech does it one way, Mount does it another way. You know, but essentially the role of the two tens is, it should kind of be the same, should it not? So you'd hope to have the same sort of like characteristics of players playing in there. But I'm sure the chemistry is... It's interesting. It's interesting because Tuchel is very, very good. You know, defensively, he's very, very good. He's got everything sussed out from that element. But it was mind-blowing on the weekend to see at halftime, they had 31% possession and one shot on goal. And you think to yourself, like, with the players that you have there and players that you have on the bench as well, you'd want to see more. I think you'd want to see more, because those are stats from a game where you'd expect to see City or whoever playing against a side that's in maybe in the bottom half of the table or something like that. So yeah, I think he's got his idea, but maybe he just doesn't feel confident enough in the personnel to be able to really drive home that idea, because perhaps at times they're too much of sort of like playing up to an individual skill set as opposed to just the role that exists within a team. Whereas I would say, to be honest, in the Champions League final, I thought they were spectacular in terms of everybody in their slots doing their jobs, but now it just doesn't quite seem the same.
I mean, the obvious difference from last year is Lukaku. And as you know, we've had this conversation with Ogden as well. I think Lukaku has added a whole other dimension to his game, which maybe was there before, but people didn't trust him on it, which is he's a tremendous provider. He's so aware of the people around him. And last season, he formed a devastating partnership with Lautaro Martinez. And I wondered, when I saw Werner in there and the three midfielders, I thought to myself, all right, maybe he's trying to do this. Yeah. Werner can do some of the things that Lautaro does. But then it occurred to me, the rest of the team. Because last year, Inter's three midfielders had people like Barella and Eriksen who could pass, who could play through a press.
Yeah.
You had Hakimi in a wide area, right? Who's basically a one-man attacking machine. Whereas this Chelsea team... Jorginho is going to play from deep. Kovacic can run with the ball occasionally. Kante, we've done it we've seen the case, but just in terms of individual technical quality to play through a press, that's not there in this Chelsea midfield. So,
and they never did it.
And they didn't even try to do it.
Yeah, and they were too deep. And I felt for Lukaku, and Nedim and I talked about after the game as well, and we said, what's the point of having Lukaku in your team if the way you set up and your game plan leaves him so isolated up front that he will hardly touch the ball, and even when he does, he will have, as we said, Ruben Dias or Laporte behind him and then Rodri in front of him.
Well, should Werner have been closer to him?
Oh, but then if you play that front two like this, like Lautaro and Lukaku, Lautaro was the one playing almost as a 9.5, and he has to drop. Werner cannot do that. Werner cannot control the ball with his back to goal with a big, strong centre-half behind him. This is not his game. His game is to run in behind and you know, use that space.
So get Havertz to do it.
But yeah, but that's why it was not just the setup wrong. I think it was even the personnel wrong in what Tuchel tried to do. And because they played so deep, the ball never came to Lukaku, apart from the last 20 minutes, maybe when Loftus-Cheek came on and made a bit of a difference, because at least finally someone was running with the ball, trying to make a difference. And I think the whole block played a bit higher because they were 1-0 down and they had to go for it anyway. But I just thought it was so disappointing tactically, from a tactical point of view, from Tuchel and Chelsea to started the game that way.
Nenim, as a defender, can you talk a little bit about how it changes playing against a front two versus a one in a situation like this, especially a situation where the strikers are kind of isolated? Because this was a theme, and we're going to talk about Liverpool and Brentford later, but it felt like this was a theme in that game too, where essentially Liverpool's center backs were 2-on-2 against Tony and Mbeumo.
I think it depends on the two, because with Werner and Lukaku, one thing we can say, which is off the back of what Jules said, like, Werner's not great coming in short. You know, he's somebody who wants to play into the space and stuff like this. But for City, what they did well on the weekend was the fact that they controlled the service into him by the press, which they initiated from the very top. So the players who were going to be playing it forward, it wasn't uncontested, because these are great players. They can play great balls. They can have encouragement. See, people can make runs, but Werner can make a run. But if the person is about to play the ball has got somebody standing in his face, then it's a different matter. So for some of those 2v2 type battles, you know, if your front line aren't working well enough defensively, then it's a lot harder, because you are isolated, and then you need to be really good 1v1 in terms of how you defend, because we saw that a couple of times with City. Like, when Lukaku really isolated on Ruben Dias or Laporte on a couple of occasions, like, he was able to roll them, you know, win a free kick or something like that. But that's when Chelsea were able to play a nice quality ball into him, because they were uncontested in doing so. But for City, you know, and other teams, if you can get it right in terms of defending from the front, then the 2v2 at the back doesn't really feel that dangerous. But then the flip side of that, if Chelsea normally play the normal way with a striker and maybe two tens, as the defender, then you can't you have to take the 2v1 with the striker, especially if it's someone like Lukaku. But then you have two tens who are in between you and the midfield. So whose responsibility is it? Can I go there? Probably not. Can the midfielder drop in there? Well, if they do, then it allows the team to bring the ball forward in a more comfortable manner. So tactically, it's a lot harder to deal with that system, I feel, as opposed to the 2v2, where you can just go and press them high and limit the quality. So it's, as I say, there's no hard and fast rule in terms of which one is, which how to deal with something or whatever. But I think City, in this game, got it right, because from the front, they just made sure that the quality going forward to Chelsea's most attacking players, who I think they were going to be relied upon a lot, because you looked at the team, like, when I saw the teams, I thought, where are the goals going to come from for Chelsea in open play? And I saw Lukaku, Werner, and maybe Alonso. That was it. That's all I saw. So if you can take out two, then you know what they're going to do. And yeah, that's why we probably saw Chelsea's worst performance of the season, in my opinion.
The press was amazing. I mean, being at the stadium, and we were really, as you know, at Stamford Bridge, so close to the pitch and just behind the Chelsea bench. The press at that level, on almost like you feel you're on it on the pitch, was just incredible. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne came off. He walked towards us. He was so red. I thought his head was going to explode because he ran so much. It was I've never seen him so red, and he looked like he could not even walk anymore. And Bernardo Silva, who I thought had an incredible game, because he's so useful in those kind of setup for City, because he runs everywhere. He's so quality on the ball. He's so intelligent. He can see where he has to run to either get the ball or close that space and things like this, which is just perfect. But their press and counter press was just out of this world, really out of this world. And I'm just thinking, I don't know if they can repeat that every 3 days. So PSG on Tuesday, do it again. Liverpool at the weekend, do it again, do the same. Or if they did it so well because the setup from Chelsea helped them. Because that 2-4-4, if Chelsea played their usual 3-4-3, you can't, Pep cannot say to Laporte and Diaz, okay, you just stay, because they will have obviously three players. Right. So that played into Pep's hand and City, and they were so amazing at it. But physically, to do that time and time and time again would be exceptional.
Well, that is, I mean, that's a good point you make about the run of games. And I think it's something that, because City won, we're not really thinking about it. But there is a parallel universe where, you know, City were coming off a game they should have lost the week before against Southampton. So if it sounds like I'm skipping over the League Cup, there's a reason. I don't care, right? It's not City. It's not West Ham. It's not United who play in the League Cup. It's a bunch of guys with double-barreled last names I've never heard of. So, but that run, right? Performance against Southampton was poor.
Yeah,
they should have lost that game. I thought they deserved to lose that game.
Yeah.
And then you get it wrong at Stamford Bridge. And then all of a sudden you have Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League, where anything can happen, and you're going there at the Parc des Princes. Last time out, you conceded 3 goals, incidentally. And then Liverpool next weekend. And then all of a sudden, you could find yourself in a really uncomfortable situation in the break. So I think after the fact, we don't realize, but the pressure was on Pep. And we can say, like, oh, well, you know, Pep's got a, you know, he's got a lifetime subscription at City. There's no pressure on him. But the pressure he puts on himself, the second-guessing that he second-guesses himself, and we've seen him do that in the past. I mean, I thought we could look back, and this could really, in some ways, be a bit of a turning point.
But just on that, and I'll pass it on to Nathan, because when we were talking on Saturday after the game, Nathan said something which is really right. He said, I think people forgot how good City were, or how good City are. And, you know, there's people who said, oh, but this City team is not as good as last season. How can they be when they added Jack Grealish and didn't lose anyone of importance? I know Sergio Aguero left, but he was not important last season. So how can they be worse than last season when they added an incredible player to an already very strong squad who didn't lose any of their important players? But anyway, and I think, Nathan, you were so right when you texted me and said, maybe people forgot how good City are and how good City were.
Yeah, I think so, because when you look at, say, the teams that are in the top four, when they're at the best, you know, they're obviously very, very good. But what I think we saw from City at Stamford Bridge, I don't think I'd see that from Liverpool, from Man United, if they try to play their best game there, because they controlled the game. They controlled the game. They limited Chelsea's attacks, and they had more chances and so on. And they looked comfortable overall. You know, you look back in Edison, he had some big moments catching balls and so on, but he didn't have a shot to save. At Stamford Bridge with that setup, with that crowd, with that energy for the team, that, like, Chelsea probably couldn't have been more confident going into the game. You know, it's for the first time in probably a year or so where City weren't favourites to win a game. So, like, their level of performance, their ceiling, I think, is just a bit higher than some of these other teams. Whether or not they hit it every week is a different matter. But for City, I understand what you're trying to say, Gab. Like, the pressure could, in theory, have been on. But at the end of the day, especially with this PSG game, which is coming at an interesting time, I wouldn't be surprised if Pep made changes for that game and then tried to get it ready for the Liverpool game away, because as things have fallen with the Champions League, it's the second Champions League game after winning the first. So the pressure for that is not the same as if it was going to be one in the later stages whereby they needed to go to Paris and win the game. You know, this just feels a little bit different.
Please, Nathan, call Pep and tell him, do you know what? This PSG game is not important. Just put the same team that you played in the League Cup without De Bruyne and Foden starting. More kids from the academy. It's good experience for them. They go to Paris, can do a bit of shopping on the Champs-Élysées. We've got the Arc de Triomphe, a new look Arc de Triomphe if you want to go and sightseeing. Then you go to the Parc des Princes, you lose 2-1, 1-0. It's okay, it's not bad. And then you move on, you win at Liverpool.
Was it the Arc de Triomphe that the idiot... The guy, was it Christo, the guy who goes like...
It's all wrapped into some sort of paper.
I'm digressing here a little bit. This was really cool when you did the Reichstag like four years ago. Yeah. This is stupid and trite now. Just stop. Stop giving this guy money do this nonsense. It really bugs the crap out of me.
You know, it's his nephew, because he passed. Christo passed. So his nephew...
Oh, was it like the brand name?
Yeah, took what over kind of a loser the idea, is his the project.
He took over the project of what? Like copying what Uncle Christo did?
Yeah, exactly.
So stupid. It's a family stuff. Honestly, like, come up with something new. Seriously. Call yourself an artist. You're supposed to be creative.
The legacy. You just want the legacy of his uncle.
Also,
you know.
It's Paris. Y'all have enough stuff. You don't need this. You don't need these gimmicks.
I don't mind it too much.
Go and cover something up in Manchester where Nadim lives.
Nadim's house. It's too big. It's too big.
Well, I don't know about that. There's no such thing as too big, is there?
All right. I want to hit another point. I know I'm tempted to go back to the Gabriel Jesus is not a center forward and this recognized striker nonsense, but I'll move on from that because I think I've beat up Augie enough on this point.
Yeah, and it's a good point.
But implicitly in what Tuchel said after the game, does this mean that we're not going to see Conte, Jorginho, and Kovacic together again? Because I feel like I don't need to see that. I feel like there's games where it has worked, and obviously we all remember those games.
Spurs second half, but do it like this. When is the when you feel
you
a halftime?
You don't need that to beat Spurs in the second half.
No. But he made that call at halftime at Spurs because the game asked for it. Because I think that was the right answer to.
I don't want
to
see this from the start again, except in very singular situations.
Yeah, I'm with
because
you.
There's no point. In spending $100 million on Lukaku if you don't put people around him. There's no point in having half a dozen world-class attacking midfielders.
That's true.
If you're not going to use them. And it's especially egregious, I think, when you don't have the attacking wing back. Once you're forced to put Azpilicueta on the right, you know you're not going to get anything from there.
Yeah.
And you're just going to get poor Marcos Alonso, you know, running, doing his giraffe act up and down the wing. He was the entire attack.
Yeah.
You know, apart from the strikers. I mean, I looked at that. Funny, I pointed out the contrast in this game, right, between what Alonso brought attacking wise, and I think he actually did okay, you know, with given the circumstances he was in, versus João Cancelo. And it's easy for João Cancelo to make those runs because you've got so much talent that you can pass to along the way. You've got the opposing team is freaking out about, ooh, where's De Bruyne? Where's Foden gone? What's Grealish doing?
Yeah,
and so you just create more space, right? I mean, it's a basic thing, Nadim, right? If you've got much better players around you and the opposition's worrying about them, it's a heck of a lot easier than when you're the best player on the team, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, when you look at City, in that game, I think that Jack Grealish was probably one of City's worst players. Like, I don't think he had a bad game, but I don't think he stood out in the game at all. Yet still, he needed to be respected because he's Jack Grealish coming off the summer and the years that he's had. So for them, for City, you know, you can afford, you don't have to rely on any particular player when you've got so many players who can step up in any particular moment. Whereas, like I said earlier, with Chelsea, I'm literally looking, unless it's a set piece, who are you thinking that's going to score the goals for Chelsea in open play? It's like
it's Alonso. Alonso.
Yeah, exactly. That's literally, you've got Alonso, you have Werner, and you have Lukaku. Like, that's it. So it seems weird, but then also with Tuchel, you look at it and how many games do you think he'll look at this season and think that he needs to start with three defensive midfielders?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not going to be many. I think that was more of a one-off than something which we'll see on a week-to-week basis because he knows it's not progressive. But the opposition he was playing against in that moment, I think he just thought that they were going to try and dominate midfield and he went for that three. And it didn't even come close to working out. But I don't expect to see that very often this year from Chelsea at all because they don't need it.
All right. I want to close out on Marcos Alonso because this is also the weekend that obviously, we'll get to this later, Daniel Maldini made his first Serie A debut. I love the idea of three generations of top footballers. Daniel Maldini isn't there yet. So as of right now, you put the Alonsos ahead of the Maldinis. For those who don't recall, Marcos Alonso's grandpa won a bunch of European Cups with Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Marcos Alonso's dad was, I think, did he win the Euros with Spain? But anyway, he lost a European Cup final with Barcelona, played for Atletico Madrid, and so on, and for Barcelona, obviously. And now you have Marcos Alonso winning the Champions League. I'm going to throw this out there, and it's going to be bad radio because you're not going to come up with anybody else. There's no other three generation.
Good Johnson, the good Johnsons. But what? What? You asked me if there's another...
Idir has a kid or...
Yeah, who made his debut for the national team in the last international break.
Okay, but it's nicely. Is the kid any good? Where does he play?
Yeah, he's good.
Where does he play?
I think he's good.
Okay, so he plays team you've never heard
of. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But okay, he's so not there or something.
That's more of a Maldini. I know, Maldini's 90. It's more of a Maldini situation.
No, but no one is never going to beat Maldini in terms of...
Well, because the other two have won, done so much, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to...
But in terms of... Alonso is in his late 20s now, at this stage. Actually, isn't there a Summerby grandpa who was a useful footballer? Shouldn't you know this?
Yeah, there's Mike and
Nicky Summerby.
I think
isn't there a grandpa who also played?
Not sure.
I'm imagining that. All right,
but Tommy Doyle at City. Tommy Doyle's.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
that's the grandson of
what?
Colin. I think it's Colin Doyle. I think it might be Colin Doyle.
Yeah,
but it's like Kevin Doyle played for the Republic of Ireland.
I think you will find either we've got the grandpa and the grandson.
There's just a lot of people named Doyle. I think you need to understand that.
No, but definitely, related. I'll check this out because me and them are right, but you're wrong. But I think you're going to find a lot of grandpa and grandson, but it skipped the father. The father was rubbish at football. Or you're going to get the dad and the son, but the grandpa was rubbish at football. But to get the three, yeah, it's really rare. Gudjonsson, Maldini. Okay. Alonso's.
But for right now, in terms of the package of the three, the Alonso's are still in first place.
Yeah.
Gudjonsson's and Maldini's might catch up because you're only as strong as your weakest link. Exactly. They're still young. Exactly. They might get there. Exactly. Nadim, thanks so much.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. Also, one last person with the father and the son is Claudio and Gio Reyna. So maybe there'll be something for that in the future.
Yeah, there's a lot of the father and son things. I'm talking about the three generation thing, you know.
That's it. Actually, we'll wait.
Was Claudio Reyna's dad a footballer? I don't know. I sent some Wikipedia coming up. But certainly Gio Reyna's mom was a tremendous footballer as well. So.
Was, yeah, so.
All right.
There you go.
Thank you so much. You cheers, Nadim. Jules, a little footnote. Nadim has left us, but we are guilty. And, you know, when you make mistakes, admit it. We did forget. In terms of three generations, we did forget. Thomas Balcázar, his son Chicharo, and grandson Chicharito.
Yeah.
That is a legit three-generation thing. Yeah. I'm not sure in football's achievement that they surpass the Alonso's. But,
no, I don't think so. But
you know, fans of El Tri, Sebastian Salazar, please don't get angry with me. I'm just throwing it out there.
Just a
discussion.
Yeah.
Gudjonsson's got a bunch of kids who might yet come good. Obviously, I want to take this opportunity too to mention Gudjonsson's dad, Arnar Gudjonsson, his grandpa here, who, by the way, also did the cool thing where in his last game for the national team, Eider came on for him.
And Eider was there when Sven made his debut last month.
Okay, so the kids so far, not in the same conversation as daddy or grandpa, but who knows?
Yeah.
It is pretty cool. It does speak to genetics and opportunity and whatever else, but we agree for now. The world champions are still the Alonso's.
Yes, definitely.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough pep. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
It was all pulling of hair and gnashing of teeth in a biblical sense after Barcelona recorded three games without a win. Ronald Koeman read his weird statement. But now they beat Levante 3-0. They used eight guys from La Masia.
Yeah.
And Ansu Fati made his return after 10.5 months and scored. That frown is now upside down.
Slightly, I would say. I mean, Levante was never one of... bloody game all season.
Levante scored three goals against Real Madrid. That Levante?
That Levante that didn't win a single game this season.
Levante is el comandante?
Indeed, okay. But that's all. But good to score early. Memphis Depay, Luke de Jong, great. The best story, though, has to be Ansu Fati, because there's still a lot of issues to be sorted out. Of course, it's good to play with Gavi, with Nico Gonzalez, who, by the way, talking about father and sons, and, you know, Fran from El Deport, Fran, is his dad. So good genes there, clearly. But the story has to be Ansu Fati. 322 days since he last played, comes on, scores a goal as well with the number 10 that was passed on from Messi to him. It's good. Let's not put too much pressure, because I don't know how much he can play now. Maybe just a few 10 minutes there, 15 before building that fitness. Because the last thing you want is a setback and him to get injured again.
I was ready to kind of have a go at Koeman and be like, look, you know, now you do the cheap thing, you just chuck in all the kids knowing they won't get booed. To be fair to him, though, that would not be fair, because everybody was injured. At the end of the game.
Yeah, Frankie de Jong was suspended.
Or suspended. Yeah. I mean, that's why Philippe Coutinho started.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems crazy to think Coutinho started the game. At the end of the game, after he made his substitutes, the only people who were left on the bench were the Neto, the reserve goalkeeper, Umtiti, who, of course, is made of glass, yeah, and some other kid from the youth team I'd never heard of. You know, this is all he has to work with. Story of the number 10 shirt. We've talked about it before, about how I wouldn't have given it to him because I don't think he needs the added pressure. What I didn't realize, though, was also they wanted to give it to Aguero. And Aguero was like, no, I can't wear Leo's shirt. Then they wanted to give it to Coutinho. And he's like, no, I'm comfortable where I am. And you could have said, shut up, you never play anyway. And in the end, they offered him to Ansu Fati, who said, let me speak to the captains. And captains are like, yeah, go for it. So I'm okay with it in those circumstances. But it's critical that they don't load too much on him.
No, definitely.
And that he'd be given time to grow. He doesn't turn 19 until Halloween.
And if we stay with Ansu Fati, and speaking of him, Gab, there's obviously loads of talks about him renewing his deal. We know that Jorge Mendes is now his agent. This is something that Barcelona have to do.
And they keep saying, of course, he will definitely go and he will definitely renew and there's nothing to worry about. He wants to be here, blah, blah, blah. But of course, we heard all this with Lionel Messi too, right? Mendes isn't silly. I think he knows that this is the right place for him to grow. And I think the deal will get done. And now it might get done with some friendly release clause and whatever else. But he also knows, he's very well aware of Barcelona's financial situation.
You know, one of his brothers, made his debut in England at the weekend as well. Biggest World United.
Really?
Yes, of our friend Guillaume Balaguer.
Oh, presumably not the little tiny brother that he went and he high-fived.
No.
Jules, Mikel Arteta got 0 points in his first three games, so it seemed logical to judge him after another three games. Well, it's 9 points, including a resounding, rip-roaring first half against Spurs in the North London derby.
They were fantastic in that first half. They were as good as Spurs were bad. Let's put it that way. And Spurs were really, really bad. But Arsenal were really good. The quick transition forwards, Odegaard, Smith Rowe, Saka, that pace going forwards. I even saw Aubameyang doing things that I've never seen him do, like little flicks and winning the ball in the air. And I was like, in front of Dayot, Davinson Sanchez, I was like, whoa, what's going on?
And in front of Thierry Henry, too. You see the 14 shirt and everything.
Yeah, and Idris Elba and the children as well. Loads of people. Daniel Ek was also in that box with Thierry Henry, interestingly. But a great win for Arsenal. The way they played, they tried to manage the second half, didn't do as good a job as they did in the first half, but it didn't really matter so much. But I thought that back five with Ramsdale in goal and Arsenal were really good. Again, what's going on with Harry Kane? I don't know. Heung-min Son tried and he was the only one trying. I mean, Dele Alli, this was one of the worst individual performances I've ever seen in the top six, top seven big English clubs.
Worse than Dombele?
Slightly worse, because he was taken off at half-time and Dombele stayed for a bit longer. But how did Nuno think that with that midfield, you could actually go to the Emirates and control the game? They were overrun, overthought, over everything. It was pathetic.
And Romero and Lo Celso on the bench, which, you know, you do this whole song and dance. And
I know, I don't get it.
Is it unkind to suggest that Nuno without Jorge Mendes is a little bit like Andrew Ridgeley without George Michael? I'm really dating myself here. Sorry, I'll move on.
Manchester United lose their third game in four against Aston Villa, going down 1-0. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is grumpy. Gab, did he have a point to be grumpy for?
I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs to be a little bit careful. Okay, it's three defeats in four, but again, let's always look more closely. Against Young Boys, yes, you were absolutely terrible. You were down to 10 men, and you had no game plan for that, and you were terrible. Fine. But then the other defeats...
West Ham in the League Cup.
West Ham in the League Cup is absolutely irrelevant because that wasn't United and was West Ham. Those were a bunch of other dudes. You against West Ham in the league, I think you could have even scored more. You had legitimate claims about those penalties. What I don't like here is, like, two things got him annoyed, right? One is Bruno Fernandes missing that penalty at the end. And he was complaining that it took so long for him to take the penalty because of the players were crowding the referee and arguing, blah, blah, blah. But then he says, well, but I don't think it got into Bruno's head. So then why are you bringing it up?
Yeah,
why are you complaining about it?
I agree with you.
The other thing was obviously on the goal where, you know, he says Ollie Watkins got in David De Gea's way. Ollie Watkins is standing offside. And the question here that referees determine is he interfering with the opponent? I think if he was interfering, it was absolutely minimal. It's not in his sight line. He's not stopping him from moving. And David De Gea, there's no way he's getting to the ball anyway.
No.
This is David De Gea we're talking about, right? I mean, it would take like Courtois growing, you know, fantastic, Mr. Fantastic extension arms to get there. So just leave it. And this comes on the heels of him on Friday bringing up the whole thing. Well, we don't get any penalties. Ole, this is not your persona. You're not Jose. Be happy about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Some people love to be on the warpath all the time. The reason people like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is because he doesn't behave that way. And so I don't want to see more of this. Just reflect on the fact that United didn't play badly.
But you think he feels like this is the pressure getting to him, so he goes
shouldn't.
Into
pressure
persona.
For what? You should feel pressure when your team plays badly. United aren't in a
United
bad
play
position.
Badly. They played badly on Saturday. They didn't deserve anything from that game. Even if Bruno scored that penalty.
I think they definitely deserved at least a point.
I disagree with you. I really disagree. And you know what? That penalty incident, what is it? Cristiano... It seemed that they all knew that Bruno was the penalty taker. So Cristiano goes and try his luck and say, hey, why don't you leave it to me?
Yeah, he could have avoided doing that. If you know ahead of time with the penalty.
If you know, and then that voice, Paul Pogba getting involved, then Emiliano Martinez coming in and all that circus. I don't know. It's just, okay, maybe I was a bit harsh. Maybe you're right. Maybe they deserve the point against Villa. I still don't think he's good enough, again, with the ball. And, you know...
Nobody's saying they're great.
No. But maybe...
You make the situation worse.
Certainly.
Napoli make it 6 wins out of 6, beating Cagliari to stay top of Serie A. Jules, they're for real, aren't they?
They are for real. 6 out of 6. Ah, they were so good. I mean... Okay, Cagliari at home. This is a game that you expected them to win, but it's just the way they play. Zielinski, who is now back at his best level, and you could see it, him and his relationship with Osimhen. Everything. I just like everything. The fact that they only conceded one goal so far in those 60 games.
What did I tell you about Osimhen? The best is yet to come, and it's coming, and it's coming. You know, that holy pentagram of great center forwards that we all talk about. Karim Benzema, Lewandowski, Harry Kane, Lukaku, and who am I missing? Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's going to be 6 soon. Osimhen's on his way.
On his way. Milan beat Spezia 2-1. And a teenager named Maldini, something like that, makes his first Serie A starts and scores. Gab, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, and it should. And look, incredible. And I made a promise to myself, this is the last time I'm going to talk about his dad and his grandfather. His dad is obviously Paolo Maldini. His grandfather is Cesare Maldini. Both won the European Cups. Both played for Italy a whole bunch of times. Let's not put any more pressure on this guy. What's interesting about him is, A, he's an attacking midfielder.
Yeah, which is different to...
Very different. Not phased by playing in the hole in this game. The other thing is, so I actually met him years ago in Baltimore. Milan were playing Chelsea preseason. And I was in a box with Paolo Maldini and his family and his wife and his two sons. And it was funny because he's got an older son named Christian who hasn't quite hit those heights as a footballer. And Christian, I think, must have been like maybe... I don't know, 16, 17 years old at the time. And he's tall. And he's got the young footballer look. Whereas Daniel was still young, chubby. But what struck me about it is it was one of those games where they send on 1 million subs at the end, right? And he's like, oh, look, you know, there's number 27. And he's like, and he would blurt out the name, right? And then Paolo would be like, who's that one? Like, oh, that's so-and-so. And these are like Chelsea almost reserve team players, right? And so I asked Paolo, like, what's the deal with this guy? Like, is he a huge fan? He's like, no, it's FIFA. He plays FIFA all the time.
Yeah.
And for me to see this little boy turn into this man, I don't know. I have a certain...
That's good.
I have a certain simpatico with him.
Love this.
So kids, play FIFA, learn the players, and you too will play in Serie A.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
No Lionel Messi, but Paris Saint-Germain go 8-for-8 in Ligue 1, beating Montpellier. But Jules, let's talk about those pesky cameras, which appear to have caught
yes.
Kylian Mbappe on the bench complaining that Neymar doesn't pass him the ball. Is this a thing or is this
it
nothing?
It is. It is a thing. It was suddenly on the moment where you see Kylian Mbappe sat down on like behind the bench with Idrissa Gueye. Neymar gives the ball to Draxler. Draxler scored the second one. And then Kylian goes, oh, you know, when it's me, he doesn't pass me the ball. Apparently, they've kissed and made up. Is that what you said?
Very quickly.
At the training ground on Sunday, and now they're old friends again.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's going to happen on Tuesday in the last minute when it's 1-1 against City and Neymar is through and Kylian is there on his own? Is he going to pass? Is he not going
to
pass?
Or is he going to pass to the Draxler?
What about the other way around? Is Kylian going to pass?
Cameras everywhere, boys.
Yeah. La Liga boss Javier Tebas has written to both PSG and the French League president Vincent Labrune to complain about the club's spending. Gab, what does he have it in for PSG all the time? The guy never let go.
He complains about Manchester City all the time,
true.
Too. I don't know what the purpose of this is. What do you want Labrune to do? He showed like his calculations that based on La Liga, they're spending X percent of revenue.
I don't know.
It is what it is. Also, what I don't like about this is it's fine, you've written to them. But then either make it public yourself or don't make it public. But don't write it and then leak it to the Associated Press. Just make it public.
I know.
Nothing wrong with that. Liverpool are held to a 3-3 draw by Brentford in a wild game. Jules, were Brentford good or were Liverpool poor? And who looks more like a crazy man out there? Thomas Frank or Jurgen Klopp?
I think...
When Frank's eyes start bulging outside his
Thomas
head.
Thomas Frank is so good, so cool. Great for the Premier League, for the game.
I wasn't going to use the word cool necessarily, but yeah.
I like him a lot.
Great manager.
And Jurgen is like, listen, his team can play that game again. They will win it. Mo Salah has a big chance at 3-2 up to make it 4-2 and Brentford never come back. But it's good in a way that they came back because they played with so much heart, so much intensity. The running, the movement, etc. I expected Liverpool to defend much better and they made a lot of mistakes. But I think Brentford deserved that point anyway.
Virgil van Dijk's had better days at the office.
Yeah, that's true. Real Madrid and Villarreal play to a 0-0 draw as Carlo Ancelotti
tinkers with his team. Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to say, why? We praised him after Mallorca. Why'd you go and change that back four again?
Because he's experimenting. Because he wants to see Valverde, right? But look, with hindsight being 2020, it didn't work out. Nacho should have played right back. Miguel Gutierrez should have played left back. Valverde was missed in midfield.
Exactly.
Casemiro still struggling. Asensio, I don't blame you for giving him another shot in the starting lineup. Fine, but this was not the game and it was all messed up. But most of
Villarreal played well, too. They had big
chances. We got to give credit to, in fact, if Unai Emery hadn't been so conservative in the second half, they might have won this game.
I agree with
Instead, it was almost like, oh, look, I got a draw. It's like 3 points at the Bernabeu. I'm like,
not really.
No, Unai, that's not how it works.
Exactly.
By the way, we love Kareem. This is not a good day for Kareem.
Kareem the dream. No, but there's nothing around him either. Come on. I know.
Meanwhile, Atletico Madrid are defeated by Alaves, who had lost every game this season to that point, scored just one goal. Jules, no Koke, no Lemar. But that front two of Luis Suarez and Antoine Griezmann isn't working and the defending isn't getting any better.
No, that was bad. That was really bad. I mean, we warned people this would come because they were maybe winning before but not playing well or having a bit of luck at the last minute against Villarreal, against Espanyol. And now this time there was nothing. Griezmann, very poor again. That front two with Suarez. Okay, I don't think Correa, Suarez and Griezmann can play well all together.
No. Can you drop Griezmann? Or drop Suarez.
Yeah, someone.
He's got the personality.
But at least Griezmann and Suarez knew each other before, so you can't even get the excuse of like, yeah, but they need to learn how to play. They were together at Barcelona.
Yeah, and with Messi.
I don't know what the answer is, but there's a lot of work there to do for El Cholo. Inter and Atalanta battled to a 2-2 draw in another wild Serie A games. Gab, this could have gone either way. That was really fantastic.
It's a tremendous game. Really ridiculous game. Pass, ridiculous goal.
Oh, the goal from Lautaro
Martinez. Oh. Come on, man. I thought that would get you excited.
Yep.
Inter missing a penalty with Fede Di Marco. First penalty he's ever taken. But then again, there's
Why
always a first
time. Why is it him?
Because he was the best penalty taker in training, and he's young. And
okay, so he's never taken a penalty, but he's the best penalty taker.
Yep, he is. Hey, come on. I'm not going to blame Inzaghi for that. But Inter lucky at the end because Atalanta having a goal ruled off after Samir Handanovic tried to keep the ball in play and failed to do so. Mikel Oyarzabal's late goal powers Real Sociedad past Elche into second place. Jules, they're doing it without Isak, David Silva, and the only living sore loss in captivity.
Indeed, Gab. And you know what? They haven't lost since that opening game of the season away at Barcelona when Memphis was on fire. And since then, they've been really good, really consistent. They could even have more point high if Oyarzabal had scored his penalty last weekend. But they faced Atletico at the end of October, that the first big game really that they have. So you can expect them to have even more points, and they could be really good this season. Juventus beat Sampdoria 3-2, but lose both Alvaro Morata and Paulo Dybala, who won't be back until after the international break. How big a deal is this, Gab?
I think it is a big deal. More importantly, they got the win, which means that they're on the left-hand side of the table. That's really good. Allegri says it's not that important because, look, you know, our Champions League future isn't going to be decided against Chelsea's Stamford Bridge. Though. I know it was sad for him, but I think they have issues defensively. 20 games in Serie A without keeping a clean sheet. It's their worst run. It hasn't happened since 1955. An injury-depleted Borussia Dortmund side go down to 10 men and lose at Borussia Mönchengladbach 1-0. Jules, no Haaland, no Royce, but this was bad regardless.
It was bad. Zero shot on target. You have nothing. Just nothing. I know you lose.
Your boy Daniel Malen, what, he's not doing it for you?
But Moukoko, I mean, it's not just Malen. Malen had
it's like, go and blame the teenager when it's Daniel Malen.
No, it's just Malen wasn't good. The rest of the team wasn't good. Dahoud got sent off.
In the 40th minute?
I didn't even think that Gladbach played that well. They didn't have to play that well.
And Gladbach also had players out.
Yeah, and Zakaria was a bit lucky on his goal. Well, the way the ball comes to him. But I don't get this Dortmund team. I don't get what he's trying to do. I don't get, even without Haaland and Royce, you should do better than this. I don't understand the dynamic there. I'm struggling.
It was his homecoming too. And so I don't know if
just don't know.
This is really disappointing. Yeah.
Lazio win the Rome derby 3-2, and what derby it was as well. Mourinho is grumpy, Gab. Pedro gets revenge scoring against his former team, and the Eagles soars. I mean, Sarri and the Eagles, it's just the whole thing. And Mourinho's press conference, he had everything.
There is an absolute ton to unpack in this game. It was tremendous. It was, you know, a derby that lived up to its name. The Eagle, for those who don't know, Lazio, they have this bald eagle which flies around before kickoff. Yeah. It's very cool. They didn't invent this. So you Benfica fans,
Nice,
I know.
Nice have it as well.
They're copying it. Sorry?
Nice have it as well.
Yeah, but did they copy it from Benfica too? Benfica, the original, right?
Yeah, I think
in fact,
so.
I think this is Lazio's second eagle. I think the first one was called Olympia and died.
Well, yeah, they're not.
They don't live forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Time, right?
You know,
but I think they get a real thing. I think there's a guy in, I could be wrong about this, it would make a great feature story for Tom Hamilton or somebody. I think there's a guy in Portugal who trains the eagle to perform. And then so Benfica, like when their eagle's going to retirement, they send them on to Rome.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidently to Nice as well. But what is Nice? Why?
It's the emblem of the city and the club.
All right, there you go. But back to the game.
Yeah.
I thought it was tremendous. Pedro, of course, released by Mourinho at Roma, like literally saying, hey, Pedro, why don't you leave? Let's just cancel last year's contract. You can go sign with somebody else. He signs across town with Lazio, scores a great goal on completing a great counterattack. Roma didn't play badly. Mourinho very angry because on that Pedro goal, which made it 2-0, strong penalty appeal on Zaniolo. Zaniolo, by the way, love watching this guy. So much intensity. Good. It's rare to see
a
number 10.
But then at the end, when he stays down and you say, like, oh, no, please, no injury.
And then when he walked off the pitch, he also touched his private parts in public. That was actually filmed by Anna Falchi, who was an Italian model and actress who happened to be in the crowd. That went on social. He could be in trouble because remember, Cristiano did that against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League.
Simeone as well.
Simeone's done it. Not a nice thing to see, but God, you got to love Zaniolo. But yeah, so after the game, Mourinho lapsing into Mourinho mode. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to him, I think, you know, they might have gotten a draw.
Yeah.
Keeps everybody on the pitch, goes and talks to the players, tells them how proud he is of them, basically lectures them, then goes under the curva to thank the fans. And then the show begins in the press conference. Because
I love that.
Different clubs in Italy have different rules. And during the pandemic, because everybody was remote and sometimes the Zoom didn't work properly, Lazio had this policy where if you wanted to ask a question in a press conference, you had to do it remotely. And you would ask the question to the press officer, who then would relay the question to the manager. Mourinho, and other clubs in Italy no longer do this because we have media and fans in the stadium now. Mourinho goes in and he says, no, I'm not going to answer any questions that you ask going to the Lazio press officer. Like, there's people here. I want to speak face to face and talk about how I feel. They told him he couldn't do that. It was club policy. So he starts swearing and he storms out. To be fair to Mourinho, he has a point.
Yeah.
Do the press conference. And it was stupid of Lazio to go and insist on this. But yeah, full on Mourinho. We're still at the stage.
Two defeats in three. Yeah.
We're still at the stage where they're not playing badly. He still has the credit. It doesn't mean the wheels are going to come off like they did at Old Trafford and at Spurs. But watch the space. Yeah. Always, always entertaining for the neutral. Lens went away to Olympique Marseille 3-2. This was another wild
incredible game.
Lens are in second place. Are they the biggest threat to Paris Saint-Germain this season?
I still think Marseille will be and
are they kind of like the tallest Smurfs, given that they're like 9 points back?
But considering two seasons ago, they were still in the second division. Yeah. They've come back and they've got, said it before, a bright young French manager called Franck Hayes at the helm, and they're doing an amazing job. And I was a bit disappointed by Sampaoli's substitution in the second half. How on earth Gerson plays the whole game, 90 minutes before coming off, was beyond me. But Lens, they deserve credit to go to the Velodrome, packed Velodrome, incredible atmosphere, to go and win the game 3-2 that they could have lost because there were chances for both teams. It was just best game in Ligue 1 so far this season. I love both teams, the way they play. But that's a big win for Lens.
Touched upon it before, there were so many really, really entertaining games this weekend.
Yes, this weekend was incredible in every country. Borussia Dortmund CEO Hans-Joachim Watzke says that despite the release clause kicking off next summer for Erling Haaland, he might end up staying at the club. Watzke says that he knows what makes Haaland's agent Mino Raiola tick, that it's not just about the money with him, that he will do his best for his client. What do you make of this?
I think he will do what's best for his client. Doesn't mean he's going to stay. I think it's highly likely he's going to stay. This whole thing about, remember, it was Mino Raiola where they had the whole thing with the Mkhitaryan business when he left and stuff that made the club look foolish. I think the less you talk about this, the better it is.
I know.
The clause is in
September
there
as well.
It's in September. I'm sure it's because he was asked about it.
Yeah, but...
But like, yeah, of course, maybe if Mino decides that it's best for Haaland to stay and Haaland wants to stay, maybe he'll stay. Okay, yeah, fine, Captain Obvious. But don't talk about this because you're going to look silly later if he does leave. And odds are, I think most people think, he probably will leave, especially given the way things are going with Marco Rosa.
Yeah.
Now, we're taping on Monday morning, and Brighton could go top of the Premier League if they beat arch rival Crystal Palace on Monday night. And it is away. It is at the Selhurst Park. But still, can we take a moment to celebrate this? Everybody talking about money, everybody talking about Brighton. Yeah. And let's give credit to Brentford too, newly promoted. Obviously, it's the same players as last season, plus Mark Cucurella, right? There's nobody I'm forgetting here that's played a significant part for Brighton this season. And they lost Ben White.
Yeah.
I think.
But last season we said the expected goals, so all the chances they were creating but not taking, was slowing down the development in a way, the progress. And also you could not see the progress in the table because they were towards the bottom. For that reason, and the people who don't believe in expected goals were saying like, oh, but that's nonsense. You know, they're there because they don't win games. Okay, but now that they take some of the chances, now that they play the same way, the same patterns of play, create the same things, but now take the chances, they can go top of the Premier League. Which I don't know if it ever happened to them. I'm sorry, Brighton fans, if I should know this. I don't know. But even if it had, it must have been a long time ago. And now that would be amazing. And that would not be that they would finish top four or mean anything else. But the fact that they have started the season really well and they play great football and they're very entertaining to watch.
I think it means that if you have a good coach who's smart and progressive, it can make a big difference. And
exactly.
I think it means we both disagree on... Sorry, it's the second time I have a go at Augie, but this idea that like big teams need big coaches.
Yeah. Leipzig beat up Hertha Berlin 6-0. Does this mean the pressure is off our friend Jesse March?
No, I think the pressure's still going to be there because look, this is what...
I mean,
what
Leipzig, Hertha Berlin.
Hertha Berlin aren't particularly good, although they were coming off a couple decent results. But more to the point, the way Leipzig play, because they're relentless and they keep going forward, especially... Leipzig under Jesse Marsch, because I think under Nagelsmann there was a bit of an evolution. Like, we don't need to play at a million miles an hour all the time or whatever. Marsch has kind of gone back to that Salzburg way of playing, where it can be a little bit feast of or famine. But your boy Christoph Nkunku,
Another 2 goals. Amazing again. 2 goals, 1 assist, got the penalty as well.
I think he's got 5 already this season.
Incredible.
Should he be getting a little more attention from the French national team as well?
He will get it very soon. At the end of the month, when Deschamps announces the squad for next month international break, the Nation League semi-final and potentially final, I would think that Nkunku could be in there.
Can't resist asking, would FC Paris be better if he'd stuck around?
FC, who are FC Paris?
Paris
FC, you mean?
Paris FC or whatever stupid marketing term. It's still Paris Saint-Germain, right?
Yeah.
So, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yes.
Would they be better off if he stuck around?
But I don't know, because on the other hand, he improved so much also because he went to something different. Because
it looks to me like he's playing a different position too.
Yeah, and because he played a different position too. So maybe yes, maybe no, I don't know. But I'm really happy for him, that's for sure.
As if the defeat in the derby weren't enough, the Daily Mail reports that the Premier League are investigating Spurs for not following guidance on limiting the number of, quote, high-force headers in training sessions. Jules, your thoughts?
So let me get this right. So all the clubs have been told, okay, this is we're doing a trial on this. Mm-hmm. So we ask you to do a certain amount of headings and headers during training. And then Nuno goes, you know, touching his beard, going like, no, I don't want... This is part of the game. Why would you not do what you ask for? Just for a limit? It's a trial. Everybody is the same. Everybody, why? You think that if you do...
He said he's not counting them.
Come on.
But look, I think this is the kind of thing where you either make it a rule, right?
But no, but you ask club to help you.
What kind
you
of nonsense is this?
Trialing.
I'm sorry. Okay. So I'm going to ask the clubs to, okay, guys, please limit your headers, right? And then what? How am I tracking, A, if they're doing it? And by
the way, they're not the only ones
who aren't doing it. And B, we're talking about, obviously this is all about, you know, the brain damage that can occur from
it. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, but this is something that comes out over 10 years, 20 years. It's not like Nuno, like, having the headers this week. It's not going to find out next week.
No, but there's a reason why they ask you to limit the headers at training, right?
Yeah, you know the reason is because they're doing a crappy job at going and testing this.
How do you know it's a bad job?
Because
they've just started it. Why don't you give it a chance and you say, okay, let's do it. Let's follow that.
If you're
going
to do it, make it a rule and have somebody actually tracking it. Don't just leave it up to the clubs.
Are they the only one? Is Spurs the only one? Or is it just the only one that got found out?
According to the report, there's other clubs that also aren't doing it. That they're not keeping track
of. How do they know? Is someone spying and just like it's binoculars in the tree saying
that? That's why it's stupid. You nominate, you say, this is what you voted in. You had a Premier League meeting just last week. You voted in. You say, okay, we're all going to do this. You designate somebody from the club to be responsible for counting the headers. And you leave it at that. That's how you do it seriously. You don't just put this guidance that then people may or may not follow and then complain if they don't follow it.
Yeah, I guess. The Premier League clubs met last week and the Athletic are now reporting that the issue of playing regular season matches abroad came back onto the agenda. Do you remember that was a few years ago? Gab, this was very unpopular at the time. What do you make of this now? Do you think that has changed?
I think it's still very unpopular with fans, with just about everybody. But it's popular with owners, like our old friends, the Glazers and whatever, who might look at this and be like, well, the NFL does it. So I think it's really, really difficult in the current climate, because if you want to do it, you have to get permission, obviously, from the Premier League, slam dunk, from the FA, from UEFA.
Not so sure.
From FIFA.
Not so sure.
From whatever confederation you're going to play in.
Not so sure.
And from the local FA wherever you go. So, yeah. It's possible. La Liga, of course, wanted to do it in Miami and whatever. But I think this is just people thinking, oh, lost revenue, Super League, embarrassment. How can I cost someone?
So this is not the 39th game. Do you remember there was a time where they thought they're going to play one more match day, if you want, that didn't count really? This would be during the normal
season.
This would
be a regular league game. Again, they're reporting that the issue came up as a means of talking about it. I don't think it's going to go away. Richard Scudamore, the former Premier League chief executive who introduced it at the time, he said it'll happen at some point.
Yeah.
I just think this is a really unpopular idea, and it's the wrong time to even bring this up, which is I'm glad The Athletic got wind of it, warned us. I don't think there's going to be any follow through for a while. Mm. Olivier Giroud gave an interview to Telefoot, yeah. which is what, foot television? All right, whatever. In which he revealed his annoyance at being left out of the France squad. Jules, what do you have to say?
He said that he was disappointed that not so much the fact that he was left out, but that Deschamps didn't call him before to say, hey, you know what, this time round, I'm not going to pick you. You're not going to be called up, maybe explaining why.
It's and not like instead, he was a World Cup winning center forward or anything.
With over 100 caps, almost 50 goals, you know, closing down on the records. And he's been so good for you, Didier Deschamps. Why didn't you just pick up the phone, even a text or anything? Like those voice notes that, you know, kids love now. And just said to him, listen, I'm not going to pick you up because I didn't like what you did at the Euros or before the Euros, because you're not playing well, because this, I don't know, do something. But don't let the guy hanging and then he sees on television that he's not amongst the list. I don't think this is a way you should treat your players.
Also, I get Karim Benzema rightly is going to be first choice. But if you want to back up big man center forward.
That brings something different. Yeah.
Who else you got?
Well, I guess Ben Yedder. I mean, yeah, Ben Yedder. Wissam Ben Yedder. No, but Martial really took... Giroud's place. He did score, to be fair, for the first time in like 25 years.
Martial.
Wolves win away at Southampton, and as Raul Jimenez scores 336 days after his horrendous head injury against Arsenal. Gav, I got a little emotional seeing him scoring, the celebration, his interview after the game, even his tweet where he thanked all the doctors and the people at the hospital. Like, wow, what a guy.
Sure did I. Listen, I think my views on Wolves as an organization and their owners
yeah,
are
well
known.
Yeah, we know that.
But I find this guy immensely likable, immensely humble. It's great to see him back. I got emotional just when he came back onto the pitch. And now that he scored, he could be real on the pitch. He's going to be a game changer for them. But I think he's obviously been missed. He's been missed by Mexico. He's been missed by Wolves. And it's just great that science can allow you to come back after a horrific injury like that. It was way back on Friday night, but Bayern Munich beat Greuther Fürth. But Jules, what was up with Leroy Sané's shirt?
I mean, you know that sometimes the people who prepare the shirt for the players have one job, is to either put the name right, and sometimes we see mistakes and the spelling, and put the numbers right.
Well, it's hard to misspell Sané, it's only four letters.
Yeah, true. But you would think that it's hard to put the number upside down as well. Sané wears the number 10 and the dude put the zero upside down, which meant that the little sponsor that is at the bottom of the back of the Bayern Munich shirt now is at the top.
The one that goes on the number. Yeah, I think it might actually be the Bayern crest.
So it was like, whoa.
I think Germany being Germany, I imagine there'll be open investigation for
big one
for gaining an illegal advantage with an illegal shirt.
God, we didn't know who Ronny Brunswijk was this time last week. But now he's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he?
So this is the guy, if you recall, he plays for the team in Suriname. He's 60 years old. Supposedly he's
vice president of the country.
50 kids. He's vice president of the country. He owns the club. The club are playing in a CONCACAF League game against a team from Honduras. He names himself in the lineup. Okay, that was last week's craziness. But now he's been suspended because video has emerged of him apparently before the game going out in the opponent's dressing room and handing out cash to the other team's players. Not a good look. CNN reporting this. Man, CONCACAF sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, that's all we've got time for this week. We're going to come back on Thursday because it's Champions League.
Yes.
The champions. See what I did there? Right, until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.